So today on SBS Radio, we are going to talk about footy and not the soccer or rugby or the proper footy if you're a Melbournean. We're going to talk Aussie rules and not necessarily the AFL, but it's a whole story. Russell Holmesby, how are you, Russell?
I'm good, Christoph. Great to be here.
It's very interesting because it's probably a very interesting story if you're from Melbourne, if you're even from Fitzroy. Do you actually or did you used to barrack for Fitzroy?
No, I actually barracked for St Kilda, the Saints, but I was approached with the idea of doing a book on Fitzroy's the last 20 years up until 1996 when they merged with Brisbane, and I jumped at the chance because I thought it was a great story. And as I sort of spoke to people and got to know the story, it really unfolded well, and it was a great story to tell, and it's been a pleasure to be part of it.
So for the people who are maybe not too fair or familiar with the story of the club, every pretty much suburb in Melbourne had a club, and then some of them died and some of them moved, like South Melbourne moved to Sydney to become the Sydney Swans. And particularly Fitzroy had a really struggled past because people loved their club. Why did that club die?
Well, Fitzroy was one of the founding members of what was the Victorian Football League before it later became the AFL. But back in 1897, Fitzroy was one of the founding clubs. And as you said, it was all Melbourne suburbs plus Geelong. There was seven teams from the suburban area in Melbourne and plus one from Geelong, which is 50 miles away from Melbourne. And Fitzroy actually in those early days was one of the really powerful clubs. In the first 10 years of the competition, they won four premierships and they were runner-up three times. So seven times they were either first or second in the competition. Fitzroy, in fast forward to the 70s and 80s, started to run into financial trouble, and that got worse and worse. But they still had a great spirit, and they had some of the best players in the competition. And they got very close to making two grand finals, 1983 and 86, just fell short. And in those years, they were one of the strongest teams in it. But the financial problems got worse and worse. They had to sell players to try and balance their books. And then in 1996, they merged with Brisbane, which virtually amounted to a takeover by Brisbane of Fitzroy. So it was, they had a great spirit. They just kept on going no matter what. And all the setbacks and that are quite amazing when we read them now. They had to switch around different training locations. They never had a home after leaving their original home at Brunswick Street in Fitzroy, where they played all those years ago.
What's interesting as well in this story particularly is because it's also the time where the AFL grew outside of the boundaries, big time, outside of the boundaries of Victoria. So can you see, is there maybe the AFL really do everything to save that club, because it was also actually quite convenient to get them to merge, and the fan base and everything that goes on with it, to merge with a club outside of the boundaries and as far-fetched as Brisbane?
Well, you're right there that the AFL was, when it went national, it was expanding, and they saw Fitzroy as being fallible and weak in finances, and they were pushing the angle of getting them to merge with an interstate or a non-Victorian club. And of course, we saw Sydney eventually, or South Melbourne eventually, go up to Sydney and become the Swans. The resistance with Fitzroy was, and the interesting thing is, people have said to me, "Oh, look, it wouldn't happen today." This was the time when the AFL didn't have the money to bail out clubs anyway, and I don't think they had the will to bail out Fitzroy. They just thought, "Oh, look, we'll get them merged with Brisbane and sort of relocate them up there." So, but I don't think the AFL had the will to save Fitzroy, but they didn't have the money either, because you've got to remember this was before all the really big, huge TV deals that we've seen in recent times. And so the AFL, you know, they tried to push for mergers. But of course, football in all respects, whether it's soccer, rugby union, you know, rugby league, it's a very tribal thing. And the dedicated Fitzroy followers, they love their club, and it was a big wrench for them. And even now, 24 years later, people still mourn that club and feel the pain of losing that club.
Absolutely. I mean, if you go into pubs, I quite often go to the Standard, for example, in Fitzroy. You could find me over there relatively often. But the Standard still has jerseys and newspaper clippings, and it's still a very strong base of that Fitzroy Football Club.
Oh, for sure. And it's interesting you say that, because we, a friend of mine and myself, we went for a day just while I was writing this, and we went for a day just walking around Fitzroy itself and going to those pubs. And it wasn't really a pub crawl, I suppose, but like you say, there's lots of memorabilia there. And one of the pubs, I forget which one, but it's got the actual sign, Fitzroy Football Ground, that used to be on the brick wall surrounding the ground. So it still has a really strong flavour, and in those days, and when you go back to the 1890s and that, when the VFL started, it was a real tribal thing. And Fitzroy was a neighbour of Collingwood, of course, and Fitzroy in the early days was a sort of middle class suburb, and Collingwood was a struggling suburb, and that divide of Smith Street, which was the boundary between the two towns, that was a real thing. If you're one or the other, you were a Fitzroy person or a Collingwood person, even to the extent that right back in the old days, Fitzroy built a town hall, and Collingwood, when they were building their town hall after that, they made sure that it was bigger than Fitzroy's, because they were trying to prove themselves. And it goes right back, and that rivalry between suburbs extended to the football field so much that back in the 1890s there was a case where the Fitzroy players were in horse-drawn carriages after the game, and they were pelted with rocks by Collingwood barrackers. So it's a pretty fascinating history, isn't it?
Those were the days, ingrained. if we look at the actual base of the supporters, surely this wasn't well by the core of the supporters. Do we know if there was, at the time, actions to try to stop this? Has it just been a bulldozer and they had to move?
Oh, no, they fought very hard to prevent it happening. And I think, look, the thing is, as you said, with the AFL was expanding, and the AFL sort of blocked off Fitzroy Kent with a lot of ideas to save the club and so on. But the AFL just blocked things that they came up with and wouldn't help them out, because they sort of had written them off in their own sense, and sort of thought, well, okay, we'll merge them with an interstate club and we'll go down that track. But and that was, you feel sorry for them when you speak to the people who tried so hard and tried so many things to try and save the club. They just couldn't sort of manage to pull it off. But I mean, it's interesting that some of the Fitzroy barrackers accepted Brisbane and adopted Brisbane, if you like, and followed them in the subsequent years. And I, right at the end of the book, I spoke to one of the fans, and he said, I took it on. I barrack for Brisbane. He said, but my son never did. He just turned his back on it. So that was how sort of it even divided families in opinion. Some that stayed with the new entity of Brisbane Lions, and others just sort of they couldn't accept it and they turned their back on it.
And it's true to say that that's true as well for South Melbourne. Remember when the Sydney Swans made to the final a couple of times? The fervour here for people saying, "Well, it's not Sydney, it's South Melbourne." South Melbourne. So people don't say tribal, even if the actual franchise move, they're still attached to the olden days.
Yeah, that's right. Well, some people did, but of course, as I said, others didn't. And you know, that was, and it really damaged the fabric of the game in a lot of ways, because even people who didn't barrack for Fitzroy, you know, barrack for other clubs and that, but really, you know, didn't like the way that the AFL forced them down that path that they eventually had to go on. And people came pretty disillusioned with the AFL. Of course, the AFL, you know, up until this year with everything happening now, but the AFL, you know, did grow into the biggest spectator sport in Australia. You know, that tarnished the image of the game in the eyes of a lot of people.
Absolutely. And then when you see where the game is heading now, you know, we're talking about a team in Tassie, for example. Do you think this push from the AFL to move in every state, in every corner of the country, is relentless? And is this the way forward?
Well, it is, but of course we've got the thing with the with COVID-19, and that's affected everything. And of course, and that actually, there's parallels in in the situation. I mean, obviously, I think when I wrote the last word for this book was about 4 months ago. And of course, we didn't know what was going to happen then with what's unfolded. But of course, now we know that there's only 6 out of the 18 clubs who are financially strong enough to exist on their own without the AFL helping them. Now, how that pans out and how that plays out, of course, the AFL is saying now that, you know, they're committed to having the 18 teams that are there continuing. Maybe the situation could be that they, have a team moving to Tasmania. The thing with the 18 teams now, and as I said, the AFL's committed to sort of keeping all of them going. But the thing in their favour, I suppose, and as I said, Kilda Berriga, we're financially a struggling club too, is the fact that the TV coverage and the contracts, they want 18 teams playing because it's 9 different games each week, so it's more content. So it's hard to see where they would actually cut back on teams, because they'd be cutting, if they dropped 2 teams, for example, they'd be cutting back on their content by 10%. So, they're going to be trying to do everything possible to keep the TV stations happy.
Absolutely. And then probably one last question. Is writing this book, you say you're a St Kilda fan, so you are an AFL and a Aussie rule fan. Does that, even if the story is hard, did that make you go into deeper your love with the game, saying in terms of, you know, there is a lot of history and people might not, the younger generation might not necessarily see this, how deep and how ingrained the history is with the country. They might know it, but they not know it in details.
Well, yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's interesting you say that because I spoke, we did probably around 70 interviews. And some of the players of that era, you know, who were young players at the time of the merger and that, and, you know, and they sort of, quite a few of them said that, you know, they say to their kids, you know, now that they play, oh, they played for Fitzroy, but the kids don't know anything about Fitzroy. What's Fitzroy, they say, you know? And there's a lesson in this for a lot of people. Like, I think it's a book that it's not just for Fitzroy fans or former Fitzroy fans. It's a cautionary sort of tale for every football barracker. And it's as one of the guys who I was talking to, one of the journos, Greg Baum down here in Melbourne, when I was writing the book, I told him I was writing this book, and he said, yeah, it could be a manual for how not to treat a club that's struggling financially. And of course now with the current situation, there are clubs that are struggling financially. So I think it's important, and it's part of our history. And it's not just, as I say, it's not just for Fitzroy fans. It's not just a tale of woe all the way through, because they had some great teams. And I want to, I hope that I've sort of presented the nice parts and the good parts of the story, and a bit of humour in it too. Just if I can leave you with one thing, with they were that short of money at one stage. They had the property van that they used to put all the equipment in for training and that. And but the trouble was, the property van by that stage, they couldn't afford to pay the registration for it, and it was unroadworthy, and it only had one indicator, a left-hand indicator. It was so bad that the coach told me at the time, he got a lift home with the guys who run the property van, but he said the only way they could get home, they had to make all left-hand turns because otherwise they'd get picked up because of the property van being unroadworthy. So there's a bit of humour in there too. It's just a good sporting football and social sort of story, I reckon.
Absolutely. I'm actually three quarters through for the book, so it's actually a great read for someone, even a newcomer in the country. And I've been here 10, 15 years, but I didn't grow up with the AFL. So it's very important to be reminded of how deep this story is and all those little stories, you're right, and how, like I said, it was the good old days. You know, it was a different era.
Oh, yeah, it was a different era. And, yeah, and it's a story that needed to be told, put it that way.
Absolutely. Thank you, Russell. The book is called Death of the Fitzroy Football Club. It's actually a great read. Thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot, Christoph. Really enjoyed it.